there's a lot of guys I've interacted with that are like just, you know, functionally crazy, I guess, you know, like they're, you get around them and they kind of have like a weird vibration, like vibratory energy. And you're like, this guy's kind of unstable, but like, he's just like, he has a job and stuff. So, you know, like he's not like yelling crazy epithets or whatever. But when I talk to those guys, I can almost predict now that they're probably were highly attuned spiritually as children and were told they were crazy.
Welcome to the Self-Defined Human Podcast. I'm Michael Kornman. This is a podcast about meditation, radical acceptance, music, art, and living in a flow state. Today, I'm talking with Samantha Fallhaber. Sam does all kinds of things. We'll talk about those in the episode. It's really quite a lot. In this episode, we'll be talking about being honest with yourself. We'll talk about meditation. We'll talk about conflict on social media. We'll talk about pie baking and many other topics. So let's get started. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Michael.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here. My dog is coming over to say hello.
Oh, nice.
Hey, Maggie. What's up?
Maggie. I don't know how to introduce you because you do a million different things. And
how would you describe me?
Well, I know you do jujitsu. I know that's a big thing for you. I know you're into meditation. I know you do coaching. I know you've published or posted a lot of stuff about communication. You've done, I think you do energy healing of some kind. It just seems every day there's something new that I see that you're involved in.
Yeah. That covers a lot of the big bases for sure. Yeah. I live in Durham, North Carolina. And I came down here, because I was, well, I mean, it's actually probably a perfect story actually, maybe to open up with, if you'd like, unless you have something particular you'd like to start.
No, go ahead. If it's a perfect story, it better be perfect.
I was living in Philadelphia for 5 years. I guess that was, 2012 through 2017. And, when I moved there, I was like, I'll be here for three. And Maggie, and she's a very grumbly dog about Jesus. What are we doing? Yeah. Okay. You see, Michael, I decided that I was done with Philly, and it was really just a feeling that it was time to go. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. And some months to maybe a year prior, I had kind of launched down this road of discovering stoicism and finding Kyle Cease and meditating a lot more. And I started going on these things I called universe walks. It was the most hippie thing that I did at the time, which has probably been surpassed at this point, because I was just fascinated with the concept of, well, if I'm walking down the street and there's like a planter in front of me on the sidewalk, I choose whether to go left or right around that thing. And there's probably a reason. So why don't I try to figure out what that reason is, you know, when I tap into that. And so I started going these walks where I would just go, all right, does it feel like left or right or straight ahead? And then when I started also allowing for stay in one place, if I didn't feel like I particularly was drawn in any direction, I remember the very first time I did that, I paused at a corner in Philly, which is a very walkable city, and immediately a car full of people I knew pulled up. I was like, all right, whatever. And I had a bunch of really cool stuff happen with that. I also did it while driving in places that I'd never been before and would have incredible experiences that I couldn't explain too. And so I was done with Philly somewhere in 2017. And I had a studio there in which I did Thai yoga massage or Thai yoga body work. And the other half of the studio was sort of personal training, like functional range conditioning, mobility work. And I started to post that I was getting rid of stuff. And I was just going to universe walk around the country with my dog until I figured out what to do. I just figured that eventually if I opened the door, there would be a clear sign at some point, because it seemed like that kept working. And since I didn't know what to do, I was like, well, walking is good for me. So before I even was able to let go of almost anything, I was contacted by Cody Maltes, who is the owner of Elevate MMA Academy in Durham, North Carolina, who I'd had a brief encounter with before. We had both fought on the same Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu card a couple of years prior, and I'd been to his school but had maybe like two sentences of interaction with him. Just noted that we had bought the same chairs for our decorations in our studios. And he asked me some mobility questions. And I remember being like, I don't really know who this person is, because I didn't remember. And I decided to go in and give him some very lengthy answers. And then realized later, after looking at his account, that I did know the guy. And so he was kind of impressed that I gave such detailed answers without knowing who he was. And he was like, well, I see that you're, you know, moving. So, because I guess I posted that I was selling some stuff. Do you want to move down here to Durham? And my immediate reaction was, no, I'm supposed to go on a universe walk. This is the deal. I'm supposed to open the door until, you know, the universe tells me what to do. I'm not ready for this yet. But in reality, it was one of those like thuds of like, oh, this is the thing that apparently I was supposed to be opening the door to, and didn't know existed. And then I went through like a couple things of like, well, I'm going to, you know, since I was planning on not knowing what I was doing anyway, I might as well ask for everything that I want. And so it was like, you know, I want to be able to teach everywhere if you want me to come down there and do mobility with your folks. And he was like, I was like, he won't like that. And he was like, yeah, of course you can teach anywhere you want. I was like, okay, well, I don't want to teach just women. I want to teach co-ed. And he goes, yeah, okay, that's fine. He like thought about it for a day and was like, yeah, you're right. That's a better idea than just women's classes. And so then I moved. And then it was like, well, I still would like some time. So I took a month between moving and going down there to actually do some random driving around and some random walking and stuff. But it ended up with me like going home to visit my dad for a while. So that story probably exemplifies a lot about my lifestyle and intentions over the past some years, since I've decided I wanted to see what it was like to live in a flow state and do what feels right all the time.
Wow. So how did that come about, the wanting to live in a flow state, like these universe walks? Where did this come from?
I have a couple of points that I am conscious of now, and I'm always open to being surprised as I talk about this, which is fun. It's not the most fun when you like learn something about yourself as you're talking. You're like, yeah. Oh, shit. I had broken up with a boyfriend in Philadelphia at one point, and I was standing in my kitchen, which is a bright green kitchen in this really cool house that I had, and was thinking, I'll be happy no matter what, you know, kind of ginning myself up a bit. And it was either as a result of the tiny Chinese shaman girl I lived with, or my own brain, I've forgotten at this point, brought up that being happy no matter what was a very different thing than being happy no matter who I'm with. So like the idea of unconditional. And I also remember a conversation that was definitely with Rena, the little Chinese friend of mine, that I had created, you know, woken up on the wrong side of the bed and created some dispute with a friend of mine. And I was already in the space of wondering what it would be like if everything was okay all the time, sort of branching off of the, you know, what if I was happy no matter what? Well, what if everything's okay all the time? And so I was upset. And then she went, well, if everything's okay, And doesn't that mean that not feeling okay would also be okay? And that was a, like, we might be onto something here. And I think there's like some deeply sourced stuff with, I'm fairly convinced that my parents didn't do anything they wanted to do in some deep ways, and seeing how that shaped their lives, as well as my brother, who passed a few years ago and had tried to commit suicide a few years before that. He was a wonderful person and very, very intelligent. And both he and my father had the tendency of putting themselves last and they're having their morality not include them, I suppose, like supersede them. Like if there was something they believed was right, it didn't, like that was the only thing that mattered. Mm-hmm. And the kind of self-suppression that led to was something that I witnessed and you know, I don't know when I just discovered, like noticing that was a thing that happened with them. But they were, at least for many years, some of the most miserable people that I knew. And you know, that was very deeply emotional to me since they were my family. And so it was kind of, I have this theory that the root of all evil in the world is people not doing what they want. And I guess that's evolved into, I don't disbelieve that now. And also I would say that pursuing calmness is more of the, how to make a right decision about what it is to move forward. Like what feels right is calming as opposed to necessarily exciting, not to vilify happiness or excitement, but that it's like a settling feeling in your body. The last studio I had in Philadelphia, when I decided I needed a bigger place as a result of the Universe Walk, where I was standing in front of a building going like, why am I stopped here? And then I looked around and was like, oh, suddenly it hit me that I needed a new studio, because the one I was in was designed specifically to be a beautiful Thai massage space. It was very relaxing, but I was doing bigger things than with mobility, and I needed people to be able to wave their arms around more. When I looked at the studio that I ended up getting, had that immediate feeling in my stomach that I wanted to vomit, because it felt right. So there's that weird juxtaposition of like, you know, what feels right may not feel good, but is necessary for my growth. That was one of the big lessons along the way of what it is to move forward. I'm not sure exactly when flow state came about as an exact enumeration. Maybe that's not the right word. Being something I described it with, but I know I was on a podcast for jiu-jitsu right after I moved here where I talked about it. So it's at least been a thing that's been around for 4 years, probably like five.
I'm very interested in the story that you're telling about stories about these types of transformations, types of epiphanies or realizations, finding a deeper connection to the present moment. I say this stuff, it just sounds like so cliche, but
I like making fun of it too, don't worry. Hippie bullshit, but I love it.
my resolution now is to be more specific with what I'm talking about and sound less like something in a fortune cookie, because it's just not, that's not really.
I use fortunes as bookmarks, and okay. I think it's beautiful.
I put these things out, I tweet them and whatever, and it's just I'm not really expressing myself clearly, you know. Tell me about jiu-jitsu. I want to know more about what you were like in the past.
I spent most of my 20s as insecure and thinking that my worth was derived from my success as a jiu-jitsu athlete.
How long were you doing jiu-jitsu? When did you start that?
I started when I was either junior or senior year of high school, and I graduated in 2003. I'm 35 mm-hmm. now, so that was around 17 or 18.
Was that like, my impression is that like, that was the major focus of your life at the time? Is that?
Not for a while. Okay. There's a lot of stories there. It's like, I just joined because my dad wanted me to learn self-defense, and
yeah,
And I would say I started taking it seriously around 2007 or 8, after starting in 2003 or 4, or 2002 or 3, whatever that was. Because that's when I started competing, and I never knew what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to go to college because I didn't have anything I specifically wanted to learn, and it seemed dumb to me. So if I didn't have something I specific, so all I used to say in high school is I want to make enough money to do whatever I want. And so after school, I was working at Hot Topic at the mall and at Olive Garden, like a bunch of hours a week, just building capital and actually investing in commodities trading. And I was very successful for a little while. Like, I was up to, you know, a few tens of thousands of dollars in the market. And then I started dating a con artist, and and I got really distracted and very impassioned. And I mean, this all kind of leads back to the self-esteem issues, to be honest, because I felt special and like sexy and like, oh boy, I have value now because the boy likes me. And he seems special because he keeps telling me these stories about being in the goddamn CIA that I believe somehow. He was a good liar. He didn't cross his stories. So I have that. And I met another woman that he crossed, and she seemed reasonably intelligent as well. So we were like, I don't know, man, like things, but but I ended up essentially after that relationship, or the very tumultuous end of that relationship, I had stopped paying enough attention to my trades, and I ended up basically going down to zero in the market. And because I wasn't communicating, my dad is my mentor with that, and I wasn't communicating with him as much because it's a crazy weird relationship I was in. And then I was just tired of working 60, 70 hours a week developing capital. So I quit Hot Topic and didn't know what else to do. And today's Sam, were I coaching that Sam, I would say, well, don't do anything. Just like, wait, and like, what do you want to do? You know, rather than trying to force something. And instead, I talked to my jiu-jitsu instructor at the time.
Meg, you're okay.
And was like, hey, do you need help teaching, essentially? And that began my jiu-jitsu career. So it was just something that, like, my real jiu-jitsu, like, career, where I managed some academies around the country a little bit and started competing, or I guess continued competing fairly successfully for a long time. And that was my version of golden handcuffs, I suppose, was that I was getting self-worth and success on the competitive circuit at the international level. And so it was just like, this is what I do. People keep offering me positions, so I guess I'll take them. When I moved to California to manage an academy, I was like crying before I went and stuff. And because I was doing it because I just thought it was, I should do it because somebody offered it to me. Therefore, like, I should want it. I don't know. Is that enough for that? Well, I mean, I love, so I guess I'd say I would just add one more thing about jiu-jitsu. Like, I got really stressed out about it and kind of came to a head while I was out in California. And I decided to, I took a little bit of a break when I moved back east. Maggie, down. When I moved back east, Maggie, you're not allowed on the couch. Excuse me. This is going to sound like a fortune cookie. Once I let myself not need it anymore, I was able to love it and appreciate it. So that was once giving it space, allowed it to actually be a valuable asset in my life. And I would say now it is more so than ever. But there were a bunch of years there where I just kept doing it because it was the thing I did already.
I guess that's how life tends to be, right? Is that the things you do are because that's what you do. It's the thing you do. Like, it's this Newton's first law, like an object in motion stays in motion.
Yeah, especially if your self-worth is tied to it.
Yeah. Flow state. A flow state. This is really important to me.
Now I'm just obsessed with honesty, to be honest. Like, I think that that's the most important thing is honesty.
You posted something on Facebook about how you know when people are being honest with you?
I had my boyfriend had actually asked me, because he was telling me about this trip that he's on, and he was talking about like updates from, you know, some drama that was going on with a couple friends of his, and what they were thinking about doing and stuff. And I felt my suspicion meter was going up about whether or not the guy was really doing what he wanted to do. And like most problems are just bad communication anyway. Like most movies are terrible, right? Like like most movies would be 12 minutes long if people would just talk to each other, right? Well, there'd be no plot. And, so I was just like, you know, like, I don't know, like, you think that's what that guy wants to be doing? And somehow like that brought us to the conversation of when, you know, well, how do you know if somebody's telling you the truth? Cause most people are in a position of just saying what they, not even necessarily, sometimes it's saying what they think you want them to say. And then other times it's just, they're just not really thinking because nobody's allowed them to sink in conversation. And so after a few beats of consideration, I came up with that I think people are honest or more likely to be honest when they pause before they respond. So if I'm in a conversation with someone and even, you know, it's even if you ask like, how are you? You know, the usual stuff, you know, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. You know, it's like, oh, there's a lot there between whether or not they think I actually mean it, you know, and all the stuff and, or whatever. But, you know, if you're really with a friend and you're catching up and you're going like, how are you? Like, no, really, like, how are you? They're probably going to take a second to assess. And I think that assessment sort of, that must be intrinsically tied to some level of honesty past the usual periphery that we exist in. And at this point, that's a major part of my coaching is trying to help people decide how to be honest or how they're being honest. That, and I haven't come up with anything better than what's the most important thing to figure out in life is how you make your decisions. Because all life is choices. So how are you making these choices? And honesty just ties in with that. Like, hopefully you're being honest. and what is honest is what feels right. Like, you posted that Jordan Peterson thing a while ago, and I was like, ah, I teach this. I call it somatic honesty.
It's
a feeling. It's a thing that hits you where you're like, how can you tell you're being honest? You know, about something, you know, reality is so fucking fluid. It's never been more evident than right now about how many different worlds everybody exists in. You know?
Ugh. I guess we've always existed in different worlds, but now we're forced to see it. We're forced to come to terms with that. And that's not fun. But it's, you know, that's what we're doing now. I was having a conversation with my sister last night about this. Like, is this inevitable? Is this... like, is this a good thing, a bad thing? Like, the fact that we have these clashes, we have culture clashes now because we have a global society, and now we're forced to interact with people that have totally opposite worldviews from ours. And, you know, what is that? Where is that going to go? Is that going to lead to something better? Is this the direction we have to go in? And I don't know the answer to any of this, but I think it's going to happen, and it has to happen, because this is just, at least we have to feel this friction somehow and, you know, work it out. It happens internally also. It's just a mirror of what's happening on the inside. I'm very self-conscious because, like, I'm trying to be specific, and this is preoccupying me lately.
Theory that you can lock any two people in an elevator and they're much more likely to come out as friends than they are to kill each other.
If you lock them in the elevator, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, get stuck in an elevator with, like, anybody. Like, if, you know, okay, there might be a couple murders, but most of the time, I'm pretty sure, you know, once people put their fucking phones down, you know, you discover the common shared humanity of things and all that. And I mean, you're right about the internal discourse. I was kind of thinking was when you were saying that the like, oh, we have to feel this friction and stuff. I'm not sure about that. Why do you think we have to feel?
Well, because this is what happens when you take two people who have opposite worldviews and you put them in contact with each other, and they're both looking for a fight. Okay, there's going to be something that happens. Like it can't be that they're just going to get along. Like that's not going to happen because they're trying. They are more interested in promoting the ideology than they are in having connections. So I think what you're saying with the elevator is that this can't persist forever, because eventually, like, there's a cost to that when you're fighting all the time. So eventually you have to that has to die down. And, you know, the fact that you're human beings is going to kind of come to the surface. But at first, there's going to have to be friction.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, this is what we're seeing now, okay? So this friction that is happening. Now, okay, when you say that you're not sure about it, like, I don't know if you mean something different than what I'm saying.
That's a good point.
In that, are you saying that the friction...
I was questioning whether or not it's necessary. In that, like, why are you, you know, with the choice options? Well, some of the things on top of my head, I feel like I have more to understand about your perspective on it. But just to say a little bit, people stay in unhealthy relationships when they could leave. The issue, I think, comes up when one person is trying to control another person. But until that point, having the differing opinion can just be a differing opinion. And even in that case, if someone's trying to control you and they have no way to do that, really? Like, if you realize you have choice, then that takes a lot of friction away, and that sort of energetically, like, allows their energy to sort of, like, whoosh by, too, because you're not engaging with it. You know what I mean? Which is why the most evil thing I've seen recently is the videos of these business owners dealing with bureaucrats trying to shut them down, because it's just this malevolent, random fucking force of people trying to control the people that you can't, like, even fight against. It's, like, not real. But one-on-one, like, person-to-person, without, you know, an agency backing you or something like that, I think people do want connection.
I guess what I'm saying is that what you're saying to allow that to happen and let it, like, is something that you, this is a skill that you kind of have to learn. And it's, in my experience, it's learned through having episodes of pain where it doesn't work. You don't, you know, you're stuck in some situation. You don't know how to get out of it. And then you feel the pain of being stuck in it.
Pain's a great teacher.
When that happens enough times, then you eventually learn. But until then, you're going to suffer. And I don't think our society is, as a whole, equipped, because I think we have these ideas that are sort of controlling us, and these memes that we have that are just running rampant in our brains, that are trying to perpetuate ideologies more than they are trying to work in our own self-interest. And until we feel the pain of that, I'm not sure that we're going to avoid conflict. Like, it seems that the conflict that we're having right now is the pain that we have to feel. We have to feel the pain of these conflicts.
Who's we?
I guess I see this on happening on many different levels. I mean, I see it happening with myself. I mean, there's conflicts that I've had with people recently. And when I see people who are so possessed by ideologies, I don't sense that they are usually in pain, that they're usually really excited about what they're doing, okay? That they are working for justice, they're working on the side of good, and they are eager to have a fight. If you take two people like that and put them in a room together, then what is going to happen there?
When I went to some of the Black Lives Matter marches, in my area, I went to two, and I like to sit back and look at people, you know, and I wasn't there during any of the rioting, in this area, but which did do a lot of damage to Raleigh, and a lot of places have not opened back up, you know, for that and other reasons. I saw, you know, a lot of people coming together that was like, oh, right, this is kind of great. A lot of these people are seeing themselves, I guess, kind of like you're saying, like excited about being on a same side as a group, of fighting for something that feels, at least on the surface, good, and also a thing that somebody else told them to fight for in this way. And you and I have spoken before, or at least beaten around similarly, about the educational system and how we're sort of taught to care more about what everybody else thinks and try to adopt other voices as our own. But what I do is I just, you know, I'm always scanning around and seeing what kind of energies I pick up on. And then I stop and I have conversations one-on-one with people. And of course, this doesn't represent everybody, but the couple of people that I had some lengthier conversations with, also had two things. So I had some of the individual conversations became very clear to me that they were just individuals looking for connection. And for many people, going to even a BLM rally is similar to sharing a meme, because you get a little dopamine hit that makes you feel like you did something, and then you don't have to make any change. But you're still as unhappy as you were before because you didn't make any change. And the other thing that I saw was that people, like, I've done these projects called Listen Up, where it's just getting on a Zoom call with somebody and giving them a certain amount of time to just vent, to just talk, and intentionally that I or my friend Colin, who runs them with me, won't respond. And I've set some up with people to talk to each other and stuff, because people have a lot of like unsaid things and a lot of things they need to vent. And part of that was also the true belief I have that people really have the answers to their own problems if they would just hear themselves think, or hear themselves talk, and come up with these surprises. And I just saw so many ungrounded people that really needed someone to listen, and to hold space for them while they vented these very real, very tragic, very scary frustrations at the world and at the things that they're perceiving. And it's fucking terrifying. You know, if you're walking around thinking that you're going to get killed, that sucks. That's not good. You know, that's a very bad thing. For somebody's nervous system and for the progress of humanity and all these things. Right. And, this is a good place to say unpopular opinions, right? Like, one of my thoughts is, that I've had was that, you know, these people, these Antifa people or these rioters in Portland and all these things that are so angry and especially against Trump, you know, the anti-Trump movement, the never Trumpers. And then you see these, I haven't been to a Trump rally, but there's some of the imagery that I've seen from various accounts of, you know, 4,000, like thousands of people gathering together and like singing, and some of them very Christian oriented, or like singing hymnals and all these types of things. I have a thought about that in a second. And like, just being like, man, if some of these like really angry, isolated, disconnected people that are in a group of other angry, isolated, disconnected people, the second law of thermodynamics is actually that, you know, things in isolation increase in chaos. And that's, you know, we have a group of people increasing in chaos, you get riots, right? But if those people went into, say, a Trump rally or a group of people that felt connected to each other, to a common cause, that they'd probably be welcomed and they'd probably, you know, be prayed for. And it's easy to you know, poo-poo that, like prayers ever did anything kind of thing. Oh, send hopes and prayers to the person in the hospital, right? Like, there are actually some interesting studies about intentions and stuff working, but it, just going along with that thought, if you have a group of people that are wishing you well and connecting for you, like, that makes you feel connected, and that does change things, and that changes epigenetic expression and feelings of connectedness, and you probably make some kind of genuine interaction. And maybe you wouldn't, maybe there are a bunch of phonies and it's a bunch of fake and all this stuff, so if it's not real, then it wouldn't work. But it was just like, and that will never happen, maybe to your point, that the ideology is so strong and so stuck that they won't find help with another side that maybe could hold space for them, because they're so angry.
Well, I don't think my point is that that's not going to happen. My point is that there is going to be friction. Like, it, the fact that we are more connected now, it's going to lead to isolated worldviews are going to come in contact with each other and create friction. It's not necessarily going to perpetuate itself indefinitely, but it will. It will happen. There will be conflicts now that we did not see in the past.
I think the more on social media we are, the worse that happens, because yes. I don't see that outside. Like, not the same. Definitely not the same. Mm-hmm. And I think there are forces at play, including a dying media that is, you know, putting its last gasps out there to make things as stimulating as possible, and the 24-hour fucking news cycle and doom and gloom all day every day. Like there are, whatever you want to believe, marketing forces at play that are ramping up the friction in a way that is artificial and yet is still felt by people. But I think the more off media you are, the less real that is connected to other things. So I don't think technology is, So like, I mean, that oh, we're more connected and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, sort of, you know, it's also just, it's easy to manipulate those pathways so much.
Sometimes I get the sense that people in real life sort of force themselves to be more agreeable than they would be.
Maybe.
How does it happen where people will, I don't know that I want to stand behind what I'm saying now, because I see a variety of different.
We're all in process.
When people are face to face, I've seen it in myself, right? That I am more agreeable. I am agreeable. Okay. In ways that when I'm by myself, it's like, well, I feel a little bit more freedom. Maybe I wouldn't necessarily. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know, but it's the case.
You were speaking to the differences between being behind a screen and being in person.
Yeah. People are more willing to, they're willing to say nasty things behind a screen.
100%.
It's so easy. You just type whatever. You don't have to see the person's face. You can just click.
Yep.
You click the emoji, the laugh icon, and then. That's aggressive. These people who would never laugh to my face, but they do it on Facebook.
This is that the most common aggressive emoji you're getting? Is the laughing emoji?
I think that's the most aggressive one. I think that is the cyberbullying emoji. That's what I call it.
I think about all the times that I've misinterpreted text messages. And in thinking about that, I came up one time some years ago. It was like, I told my brother, we were driving, I told my brother, record this real quick. I just had a thought about when, because you're absent so much context, when you are doing text messages, it was like, yeah, you're just left with like the vacuum of your own self-perception at that point. So if I'm insecure and a guy I like doesn't respond fast enough. The meanings that I assign to that are so crazy. And I'll tell you, one of the drills I've come up with, or exercises I've come up with to help people break down those narratives about what things mean, is to use creativity and be silly about it and be like, oh, okay. Like, the first time it came up was, I was standing outside of a venue with a guy, and his girlfriend had shown, or his recently ex-girlfriend had shown up with a guy. And he didn't expect that. And so he was kind of like freaking out a little bit. And I was like, hey, why don't I go over to the woods over here and I'll murder you. I'll talk to you. just felt like kind of out of the way and you're by trees and stuff. And I was just like, okay, like, you know, let's calm down a little bit. And I was like, I want you to come up with, and just pick like an arbitrary number. I usually pick like 8 or 9. Like, hey, like, and just like meditation, and just like all these things, you need to push past like the comfort zone just a little bit. So if I ask somebody to come up with 3 reasons why you think your ex-girlfriend came to this event with the guy, you know, you're not really going to break out of your narrative. You need to like get done with the crap in the front of the brain. She came because she hates me, because she wants me to feel bad, because she wants to show the world that she has a better person. You get to 8 or 9 and you start to like break down the narrative a little bit and start to get a little closer to what's probably true, and that sense of somatic honesty. And I want them to come up with at least one that involves aliens, like something that's so outlandish that you can begin to be like, okay, well, if we're eliminating one of these, like, so you can start to break stuff down, like, all right, we just give you that easy one of like, yeah, probably wasn't the aliens one. And since I eliminated one, now I proved to myself I can eliminate one of these reasons, and I can start to go down farther and eventually narrow in on what the actual thought that I have is behind all the fucking chatter. so, yeah, like things are crazy if you just leave yourself with the... I think it's so important to decide, figure out what you think about yourself and what your beliefs are. Like, one of the reasons that I'm so fucking chipper all the time is because I believe that people are love at their base and are loving. And I think that anything outside of being loving is the aberration that has been caused, or you can link to childhood trauma, betrayal of self, disempowerment schemes, where they, you know, made their choices, which essentially is making choices based on something besides what feels right to you. Anytime you make a choice that's done for a reason besides it felt right to you is trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Huh. And you get farther and farther away from yourself. You keep fucking packing it on there, and you gotta like, what do you think about you? What are your internal voices saying? Like, and then that's not even getting into like spiritual entities and shit, Michael. Some of the voices in your head aren't even yours. I do that shit all the time. Like, it seems like half of the sessions I have now involve like releasing some spirit energy from somebody.
How is that different from it being you? The voice is not yours. Like, what is it?
My understanding is that like spirits that haven't crossed over all the way, you might call it purgatory or something, you know, still have whatever shit they were dealing with, like lessons they were learning or like anxieties that they had in life are still with them because they haven't crossed over. And so they latch on to you, or they might be invited in as a lot of times it's like a protective entity that you always invited them in some way, or you can match energies with them. So if you were like a kid and you were really scared and you didn't have like the protection that you needed, you might invite the very first like exorcism type thing I was ever in was a something that had been with a guy since he was a kid. You know, just like every other relationship, like, yeah, or maybe it served its purpose for a while, but if you like keep hanging out together for too long, you start to get like resentful and like think you're not growing in the right way and all this stuff. And so you just, you know, you can ask them the voice, you can ask the voice in your head about like, hey, like, who are you? And if a name pops in your head from wherever it is that thoughts come from, then it's probably the name. And so you have a conversation with it and you go, okay, well, like, you know, whether or not you believe it's spirits or not, you can do this and be like, okay, well, what's, you know, how long have we been hanging out? Like, why are you with me? These things. And you'd be like, are you from the, you know, various teachers say different things. Like, are you from the light? Are you here for my highest good? Yada, yada. And then you like I'm currently at a place where it seems like the basic outline of releasing that sort of energy is to find a genuine place of gratitude for the help that it offered you or that it provided to your life. A very blunt release of it. Like, I'm so thankful. I helped a guy with some entities that were sort of associated with like bullying when he was a kid. And he was just like, thank you so much for, you know, for being with me and for showing me that I could be strong and for, you know, being with me for all these years. And I no longer need you, and I release you, and I would, you know, I'd like to, you know, help you cross over or whatever it is. And then they have this incredible like feeling, usually of like a lift or a weight coming off of their shoulders or their chest. There's a visceral expression of the energy being released. Sometimes it's visual for people. And then they just feel like a totally different person, and like shit starts to change really fast afterwards. It's really neat. Fuck it. I mean, it's never planned. Like, it's always like, I just hear somebody.
Yeah.
I'll hear something in somebody's voice and be like, what was that? That doesn't sound like you. It's like, that doesn't sound like your voice. It sounds like something else expressing itself through you. And then we have a conversation, and turns out it's some guy named Bob that's been hanging out with you for, you know, 20 years. And
do you relate this to the sankharas that come up and are released in Vipassana meditation?
That's a good question. I've been thinking about the, what are they called? The kalepas or something? Like what was the tiny?
Kalepas, I believe that's the word. Yeah, the the
tiny subatomic structures. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like
vibrations.
Like, they really have shit figured out. more and more. It feels different to me than Sankara, because I feel like my impression with Sankaras are that they release. Should we explain what Sankaras are? Do your people know what?
I don't know who knows what, you know, people know different things. My understanding of it is that a Sankara is it's like a conditioned pattern, a conditioned behavior of some kind that comes up when you sit in meditation and you don't move and you don't do anything, you allow things to, you allow yourself to experience your sensory reality. You come face to face with those reactions that you have, with those conditioned responses that are inside you. And it's like, it feels like things are bubbling to the surface. Things are coming out that you didn't even know about, and they just come up. And when you don't react to them, when you don't go along with them, they just kind of fizzle out.
You break the cycle. That's exactly what I think about the pausing before you respond. It's just a different time signature, right? Or a different pattern interrupts that changes fucking everything.
Now you're seeing it as an object, and it's not simply, it's not subject, it's not something, it's not the lens that you see reality through. It's now another object in reality. So it has a different function in your existence, in your experience.
Mm-hmm.
You are reacting to the observation of it, not to it itself.
And you're allowing yourself to actually sink deeper, because you're allowing the sensation to ride through you. And I mean, you may have experienced this as well. I know my friends and I often talk about how my friends that are more emotionally skilled and are okay with their emotions, like when you allow the stuff to come up and you don't try to suppress it, like the thing that feels like it's going to be a huge eruption and oh my God, it's going to be so much anger. It's going to be so many tears and stuff. It might be like a whoop, and you're just like, that's it? What the fuck? Like, yeah. Like it's almost disappointing sometimes, because pleasure in like extreme emotion, because it's so deeply sensory. And then it goes away. Like the only one that I know of that well, the main one that I know of that doesn't seem to have that fast of a thing coming through is grief. Like grief seems to really hang out for a while, but most of the time, even big anger and big happiness and big sadness, you know, capital B, tend to move through and like it's nothing. And then you're like, oh, okay, whatever. But yeah. People are so scared to feel it because they've never, there's levels there, right? Like if you I don't know where I want to go with that. Like there's a difference between feeling it yourself and being okay with it and being witnessed feeling stuff and the other person being okay with it and being in a group and being witnessed and then being okay, you know, like they're all different levels of what truly feels safe and welcome. And I think that pretty, again, speaking to like the all problems thing, like if I'm going to like a root, I feel like all of the negativity and stuff in the world can be traced back to, or all the stupid addictions we have and all these things are just compensations that we have for a lack of community in which we feel safe to express ourselves and to be honest.
I have this theory that as kids, we don't have that safe community that we're supposed to have. And as a result, we go through life trying to find it. We go through life dealing with the consequences of not having those things, those needs met. And we try to look for those things. So people do things like, you know, why do people test their friends all the time?
You're
why do
handsome,
people
Michael.
Like, what's that?
You're very handsome, Michael.
Thank you. The people are doing stuff like that all day long. And so we don't notice it because it's all just trauma. Okay. It's just trauma. And I wonder how much of that can be fixed just by not screwing up kids so much, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, fuck yeah. There's a, I'll send you a podcast after this I was just listening to about archetypes, and they're talking about, I know that something along these lines enough that sprung to mind is discussing it, and maybe you'll listen to it. But I mean, all right, I guess I can't really summarize what you said. So you said about, as kids, we don't have safe spaces. And so we go run around trying to find safe spaces. Mm-hmm. And
in very dysfunctional ways. I mean, by you know, employing the intelligence of a 2-year-old to try to find that. And from people who also have the same similar traumas as we do.
Yes. 100%.
You asked, what do people know? What does the audience know about sankharas and whatever? And it's, to me, what I ask myself and what I'm often thinking about here is these podcasts, like these types of conversations, like I want it to be interesting. I want it to be like an interesting conversation. And sometimes that does it, blah, 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 blah. Like I'm just like, there's this thing that's talking. Okay. It's talking, the part of me in front of me. And there's like another part of me in back that's kind of, more deeper. And I don't want this to be a boring conversation. And if I avoid talking about things that people might not understand, I think it becomes a boring conversation because I'm sitting here trying not to say things that people won't understand.
Oh, I think you should talk about what's interesting to you. I just think it's also, you can just be cognizant of like, all right, we might just take a second to be like, what the fuck, what is that? Like it's something right. else. I used to get pissed off at my friend that used to talk about her endometriosis. Like I knew what that was all the time. just sometimes when you talk about things and you're just like, as if the audience knows what's going on, and it's just not helpful sometimes. But yeah, you don't always need to pander to that and stuff. I just felt like for the purposes of that question, which actually I think that sankharas are different than the spiritual entity stuff I was describing, because sankhara feels like entirely internal to me. And just non-reaction allows it to leave. and the entity thing is an external being applied to you, or
okay,
that you help release. Which I guess is, I've never described it like that before, but
that seems all right.
Yeah, and it's fucking weird, right? I mean, so look, here's the thing. Like, you talk about trauma stuff, right? The quickest way to traumatize somebody is to deny them their reality. Would you say that's probably right?
I guess you could say that, yeah.
You could say gaslighting is kind of included in there. And
I hate,
you
know, the word gaslighting. I hate
this. I don't like it either, but the people use it a lot. And
I know.
We don't have to use it. We should come up with something else and call it, like, oil burning.
I said, I posted something several months ago. Like, there's only two things you can do to other people. You can either traumatize them or you can empower them. Like, every interaction is going to do one or the other.
But you can't do that to them. They do it to themselves. I'll stand by that at a high percentage without it being 100%.
It's like, you know, if I'm having an interaction with you, it's like I am in to some degree controlling your environment. Okay.
If you let me,
sure. That's an interesting question. Like, is it possible that I might have more strength than you do? And I could, like, even if you try not to let me, but I can overpower you with psychic force. Is that possible?
I guess the question is, I think it's possible, but I also have to allow it. Which brings into play the question of whether or not I am aware that I have an option.
Right. So if I'm aware of more than you are, look, gaslighting in the real sense of the word, like the sense of that I am trying to manipulate your environment, to really try to convince you that you are crazy and that I have a better grasp on reality than you do. If I'm able to do that, which would require having more knowledge than you do of your environment, then you'd be in big trouble.
It has to include a lack of self-trust for me. Like, what's the difference between somebody? I've done some Brazilian jiu-jitsu drills before where I have, three students training and two are training with each other and then one person is coaching. And I'll throw out the idea there. I'm like, yeah. And so part of what you're doing when you're training is practicing when to listen to the coach. Because they can't see and feel and understand exactly all of the pressures and angles that you're experiencing in the moment, you know, and because I'm an asshole, I like to throw in there. Yeah. Because, you know, there's going to be a lot of people yelling stuff at you and you got to figure out what you got to listen to, you know, life lessons, anyone. what I was bringing up was that particularly males, it seems I've come across more for whatever reason that is. Maybe women are, if either sex is more dominantly allowed to have whimsy in their lives, it's probably women. There's a lot of guys I've interacted with that are like just, you know, functionally crazy, I guess. You know, like they're, you get around them and they kind of have like a weird vibration, like vibratory energy. And you're like, this guy's kind of unstable, but like he has a job and stuff. So, you know, like he's not like yelling crazy epithets or whatever. Uh-huh. But when I talk to those guys, I can almost predict now that they're probably were highly attuned spiritually as children and were told they were crazy. Mm-hmm. And so they have that like original, like all you need to do, you're right. Like, all you need to do is break down, and it's easier to do at a young age when you're dependent. And, you know, like the whole structure is, you know, so many people don't even have two parents, and even two parents is very different than having a tribe of people that are supporting you and love you and, you know, influencing you so that you have less of a deification of these two people because you have other adults influencing your life.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? Isn't it? Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're lucky nowadays, you have two. And the, but as a kid, like, the, you know, it's, all you need to do is, like, be like, no, 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 you're wrong. That's not happening. That thing you think is happening, like, that'll just break you because, okay, well, that was what I perceived, so now I guess I'm just going to rely on everybody else to tell me what I perceive. And that's how you, to me, that's the short version of how we end up with what's going on today. Uh-huh. Is everybody just, okay, well, I can't trust myself, so I should just trust whatever, who's ever yelling the loudest, you know, or the most, or yelling the most loudly around me. Sorry, Dad, if I use wrong grammar, incorrect grammar, damn it. but yeah, like, that's it. And you see that at all levels, but that's particularly when it comes to things that are kind of ethereal or whatever, but any perception of reality that's been denied, particularly at a young age or any kind of, you know.
I noticed at one point, I think I was in high school, maybe in my early 20s. I don't remember exactly when it was, but I noticed that the way that I was going through life and when I read things, I noticed my mind searching for, like, who to cling to. Who is it that's telling me how things are? And I noticed when I found, like, contradictory points of view when I read them, I noticed that, like, my mind couldn't settle because it was trying to pick one or the other. And I noticed how I would just, like, really try to pick one, and it would just do that. It would just gravitate towards one. And I would feel so relaxed inside when I found that. And then, and I would get upset when somebody, when I read something that challenged, I just noticed this inside me. And I, you know, I've never been a very ideological person. Okay. But it just, I noticed
thank
it on a
God,
subtle level.
By some miracle.
Yeah, I know. I think it's because I just spent too much time by myself as a kid. I think I just never really, I never really learned to find comfort in groupthink the way some people do, because I just, the group never seemed to accept me all that much. So I don't think I learned.
Why do you want to start a podcast?
Let's see. I wanted to start a podcast. Why did I want to start it? Let me just think about that for a second, because I don't know why. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I thought this would be a cool thing to do. When I was a kid, I was into podcasting before anybody else was, because when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, I used to record on a tape. Like, I would just talk with my stuffed animal, Piggy, his name was. I think he was a rabbit, not a pig, but I called him Piggy. And he and I would do a radio show where I would just ramble about whatever was on my mind. And
it makes my heart glow.
Yeah. I kind of see this as being a continuation of that project that I started back then.
Aww,
why, did you, why do you ask?
I was interested. It occurred to me.
Yeah. It's
see right there is a spot that I would ask you to, like, sit and sink into feeling for a second, and I feel like you choke it right about here.
Yeah,
pretty accurate. Or
oh yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, embodiment and feeling is you know, both letting, I think both letting stuff leave and letting stuff sink in, you know, it's still that transient stuff of that, not trying to control everything. I have a client right now who's, her homework for the week was to accept something, you know, every day, or at least most days. But the very important detail on that is to accept something about herself. Because when you accept, you know, things that they're already accepting enough crap in the outside world around you that maybe you shouldn't be, you know? Mm-hmm. But when you're chaotic and things are never enough and all these things, I'm like, okay. And it's kind of cute and funny to me, because I think it's so easy and interesting, is that like trying to accept something about yourself sounds like such a tall order if you have issues with that. But with her, I was just like, hey, like, okay, it doesn't have to be like a big emotion or something like that. You can accept that you're not accepting. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, all you need is the in, like the one honest thing. Same thing with self-love. Like if I tell you to like, tell yourself 5 things in the mirror that you love about yourself, you might be like, fuck you. Like, and you might be right, because like the point is you can't lie, because if you're just lying, you're just perpetuating all the bullshit as it is. So you have to go and find whatever it is that you can actually, you have to find something that you don't hate about yourself and use like an accurate terminology. And that's your in, that's your in. Okay. That's the drop of ink in the water that can start to spread out. And it all has to be based in truth, in a felt sense of truth. And that starts to give you internal stability. And then you might even start making, you know, little promises to yourself where I'm stupid stuff. Like, you know, actually I think this is advanced because it's been so hard for me to be like, I'm going to get onto this app to do this thing and like not let yourself get distracted and like be like, no, I came for this thing. And then actually like getting in and out. Easier is real world stuff that's not as shiny to be like, I'm walking to the kitchen for cereal and I'm only gonna get cereal, you know, like, or I'm gonna go to Target and only buy this one thing. And like, you walk out, if you actually only buy the one thing, you walk out with a little sense of like trust. Like, oh, I can fucking trust this guy. Cool. Now that's something to grow. And then that makes you more impervious to everybody else. When you build trust in yourself and have actual reason to, and that involves you not allowing other people to push you around, even, no matter how hard it is.
This is really important. This, to me, this is a technical thing. It's so easy to think of this. Oh yeah, just trust yourself. But it's like, you're talking about moment to moment, like you make a commitment.
Don't lie.
Do it. Like right here, right now. And this, I mean, the way I see it, it's like, this is, it's right in the moment. It's technical. It's like, it's something that you're doing right here. You are building something very specific that you have the ability to make commitments and keep them to yourself. It's just like the ability to, I learned this in music, is where I really started experimenting with these things. And I came up with all kinds of exercises about where it would be that. It's like, I playing the piano, I am going to, at this exact moment in time, using a metronome, okay, I would play a note with the metronome, okay? And no matter what happens, I know that my arm is going to drop onto the keyboard when the next click happens.
Trust.
Yes.
Trust. Yeah.
Right. And that opened an entire world for me, because the whole thing is a fractal.
I see that in your meditation practice where you're like, I've set the timer and I don't leave.
Exactly. Yes.
Do you find that leads to you opening up into less regimented trust at all? Like,
Right. Because what the regimented one does is it brings you in contact with the immediacy of your experience. And that becomes something that eventually you can access it whenever you want.
This is a little forced, but I find it entertaining, so I hope you humor me. Are you familiar with the idea of like masculine and feminine energies?
I don't tend to think of things in those terms, but I've heard other people talk about it.
Right. I know you're really excited. I can tell. So, the idea is that everybody has masculine and feminine tendencies and same person, all these things. And masculine is described as like structured, structure, environment, da da da, get shit done. There's a lot of different ways to describe it. And the feminine is like the antidote to that, of, or the other side of like flow and creativity and art and all this stuff. And like, you know, if Jake Woodard is a guy who does a lot of stuff on this, and you say like, if men are, or masculine energies are, because it doesn't have, they can be feminine men and masculine women, all that stuff. But if the masculine energy is the trees in the forest, the wind blowing through it is the woman, you know, or the feminine energy coming through it. So like they complement each other is the point. Like it's sort of like the, you need structure and, or like you need science and you need medicine and all this stuff, but like this, you know, Dead Poets Society crap, right? Like, oh, like all this stuff is really important, but what makes life worth living, boys? It's poetry and music and all this uh-huh. stuff. Yeah. So being, finding those places, or as that one of your newsletters that I just read that was wonderful was about, how much you cared about your teacher, thinking that you played well, and then you had this one fucking recital or whatever you want to call it, or that where you went yeah. for some reason you had an epiphany that you wanted to play the music the way you wanted to hear it, mm-hmm. And having that freedom. And I think there's internal struggles along those lines of like, it's the difference between trying to want it to be perfect and then feeling into it and letting it flow, and maybe that leads back to the flow state, like trying to do things at all is not freedom versus just allowing something, you know, energy flowing through you to express itself.
Yeah. Well, this is a paradox, because there's two sides to it. This is the middle way, I guess it's called, right? The Buddhist idea of that you're not trying to find one extreme or the other extreme. You're trying to find the thing that's in the middle. And it's not, this is not, does not mean it's a compromise or it's a watered down version of it. It's the way I see it is that there's everything that you're ever trying to do is like, there's two sides to it. And the way to do it, I look at this in meditation. I look at this in music practice, any kind of practice, is that you want to practice the extremes. Okay. So when you practice the extremes and you get good at the extremes, okay, you get good at, let's say in music, I'll talk about this, like you want to learn how to do it right, and you also want to learn how to do it wrong. And when you get really good at both of those, then and only then do you have the freedom to find, to calibrate it wherever in the middle it needs to be in the whatever context you're in.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
The meditation, like a strong determination sitting, you're sitting
it
with
breaks you free of the attachment to one side.
Yeah, right. You don't have the attachment, and that's the thing. That's the thing. It's like with meditation, you are in with a strong determination sitting, you're telling yourself, I'm not going to move. I'm going to sit here, say for 1 hour, and I will not move. That can be very forceful, and that can be not good. Okay. That can traumatize you or it can reinforce existing traumas.
I think of it as being your own friend for an hour.
When you are doing that, well, okay, let me just, I'm going to hold on to that thought, and there's two extremes here. It's like sitting still, and there's also the extreme of letting yourself do whatever you want, okay? I practice both of those, and I think that pays off greatly to practice both.
There's this this guy, New York Nico, on Instagram. Really, really popular guy. At least 500,000 followers kind of thing. And he had this video of the polar bear plunge thing that happens in the Hudson, I think, in New York. You know, everybody running in the cold, and people dress up and make fun outfits and stuff. But there's this one... he makes these little collages of the events, you know, for the 1 minute slots. And There was a scene, like, 1 second, 2 seconds of a guy wearing a scarf who's standing in the water, you know, with all this chaos around him, and then he just goes, and so many people notice that moment and that calm, because connection is a pause allows for connection, and like a making room for actual feeling comes in. And I just, that came up for me a few seconds into that pause that we just had, was that memory. If you ever look up New York Nico scarf guy, it probably would, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's put it on Reddit or some shit, like that moment.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. And it's just the moment. That's what people, I think that's why podcasts are so, I mean, it's definitely one of the reasons why podcasts are so popular, is because people are like, holy shit, like people actually talking to each other.
Yeah.
Uninterrupted. That's why sometimes social media feels so bad to me, is because it feels like, you know, like being in an, like Bambi in an open field. Like, you don't know what predators are around. Like, I'm like, I'm going to put this thought out here, and there's stuff coming from all sides. You know, no matter how well intended it was, it's possible somebody could take things. And that's, you know, that's been a good learning experience for me too about that. And right now I'm at a place where I just don't even want to be there that much anymore, because I feel like the best good that I can do is in person, or like one-on-one with people. And I still love all the stuff that I have out there, but it feels really nice to kind of have stepped away for a little bit, to be honest. But I'd rather have conversations like these, you know. Invite me on your podcast. all those things, because it's like, oh right, there's nobody interrupting.
Yeah, I know. Do you think, as you're talking, do you imagine what people might be thinking, what people later are going to be thinking about this?
Well, it's not my weirder topics, you know, it occurs to me, but I think I'm doing a pretty good job of week to week, month to month, giving less of a shit.
Yeah.
I still have a little rise, but
I'm thinking about the flow, the idea of flow that you were talking about. This is the thing. It's flow. It's flow. Because there's like a flow. There's a, you can get into that. There's a wave. Okay. There's several different waves, but it's like you can find one or multiple ones or whatever, and you can kind of pick them out of the texture of reality, and you can sync up with those waves if you want.
I think the scariest and most important things that we can do in life is to do what feels right and to be honest. And that those perpetually will lead us to the right things.
Yeah.
And it's the scariest because there's nothing else. You know, I've sort of laughed about that. Like, what if I'm wrong? Like, what if I'm wrong that doing what feels right was the wrong decision? Like, and it's hilarious because I have to entertain the opposite of whatever opinion I'm putting out there. I try to do that as quickly as I can, often instantaneously, without driving myself insane, because I have to be able to stand on something, right? And because, yeah, it's all process. We're going to change, you know, very different. More strongly I react to something, the more I can predict that I'm going to be like a fan of it in like 3 weeks. And since I know that now, I'm like, yeah, I'm really talking shit about this thing. I bet I'm going to be a fan of it in 3 weeks. God damn it. Yeah. It's so annoying. But I was just laughing with some friends about that. I was like, yeah, like, what if I'm wrong? What if doing what feels right is wrong? Part of it is that I think people could relate to, is the idea of like, I don't want to be on my deathbed with regrets. Like, that's very unappealing. And this is the only way I can see for that to possibly happen, is to consistently be honest and do what feels right. Because when you're on your deathbed, what you're going to find is the stuff you regret is the stuff that you didn't do that felt right to you. Those betrayals. Mm-hmm. I think Maggie needs to go out soon, so we should probably wrap up in a couple minutes.
Okay.
Her whining is getting to that point. Meh.
What? So you think maybe another 4 hours? Maybe we can.
I'm sure we could.
That should be good, right?
Okay. You can come visit. You know, my purple house is open for people to come and spend time as a gift from me.
Nice.
Which I just got in the woods. I'm preferring the word gift very much to free, although that's also what I mean. Or like you come and all the fridge stocked with nurturing food, and there's no Wi-Fi, and it's in the woods, and it's also close to things, and it's dark. I use candles a lot, and you know, you just spend some time being completely accepted as who you are. And you know, if you're willing, I still have to make it, but my plan is to paint a plaque over the front door that just says, "I promise to be honest." And that would be kind of like, I don't know, like the mantra as you walk in, that you're ready for that fire and that discomfort, you know, for as long as you need to stay, or until it no longer feels right for the both of us. So that's an open invitation to anybody listening to this. I've had one person in so far. I've been in the house less than a month, and I had my first person this week, and hopefully I have somebody coming in next week or the week after. It's great.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Fucking awesome, man.
Yeah.
It's so good. People need more voluntary stuff in their lives. And, you know, if something as weird as that can even be a very monumental decision for someone. I love logic. I do. Even though, like, logic puzzles weren't my thing growing up, they would irritate me. But, like, I was better at verbal than I was at math, too. But I'm a terrible half-Chinese person. When people break away from reason and logic and rationality is when, like, they allow magic into their lives, which sounds stupid, but, like, it makes such a big difference. And to me, the most, I feel like I have my cake and eat it too, because I think that the most logical thing is to do what feels right all the time, because that's the thing that's going to keep me from hating myself on my deathbed. The most logical thing is to do what feels right.
Logic and magic. That's cool.
Oh, are you a baker?
People are going to wonder what the professionally. I've baked. I've baked. My grandmother taught me a lot about baking.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to hear about that.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Well, but like, Michael was kind enough to delay by like 2 fucking hours because I was like, Michael, I'm trying to bake a pie and I need time. And then I was late and all this stuff. And he was like, don't work the dough too much. And I was like, yeah.
So how did that come out?
I don't know yet. Dough is resting in the fridge. And also I'm using like a fun fucking gluten-free flour shit that's supposed to be like just as good, but we'll see.
I have never used gluten-free flour, so I can't comment on that.
I'm gonna live with my choice. I was at one of these frou-frou grocery stores, so I was all ready to just buy my small bag of flour, and then there were 17 options in front of me.
Wow. I don't know how this works, because the reason you don't want to work it too much, I think, is because of the gluten.
Exactly. I don't know. I'll find out.
I'm curious. You have to let me know about this.
I will. But I thought that was really cute that you know about. I have a couple friends that we have a group chat called like the bone broth community, because all of us are always making bone broth and baking things and doing stuff. And my friend Govinda, I messaged. I was like, do either of you know about pie crust? I need help with pie crust. I'm trying to do from scratch. And my friend Govinda was like, no, I'm not a pie person. I'm more of a cake expertise. And I was like, how cool is this though? That I'm like, I have a friend who I can probably talk to about the chemical reactions involved in cake baking. What is something, I'm so curious, what is something that you like about me that I have shared perhaps?
today or just in general?
Not necessarily today, just in general.
What I like about you, I like the thing I like about you. I don't know if it's something you've shared. I don't know. I'm just is that specifically you want to know something you've shared or just what I like about you?
Now I'm interested. Whatever you're gonna say.
I mean, the thing I like about you is you have a way of looking at reality that resonates with me and is something I don't see in most people. Okay, you have a certain
weird hippie bullshit. No.
It's just a perspective, a certain, you know, you have insights that most people don't have. And that is, there's something about you that's like, that's, there's something that is pure. There's some, it's like, it is a good thing. Okay. I look at you and I see you are not, this is so simplistic what I'm saying, but it's just, you are not like, you're not, I don't see a lot of the, there's no, I don't see these dark, evil forces inside you, okay, that I see in most people. And it's not a, it's, I'm not saying everyone is evil, okay, but they are because they have a, they have ignorance. They don't see.
My boyfriend. He's like, honey. I'm like, no, don't lock your doors. Everybody's love.
Yeah, right. But it's not just like you're naive. I mean, you have, it's wisdom is the word, I guess. But these words are just words.
Words are important. And you're very good with your words.
People will misunderstand the words because I know the words, it's like paradox has to be in there. Okay. Because the paradox that captures both extremes has to be involved in language or else the language is misleading. It only captures one side of it. So I have to speak in contradictions and I would have to be wrong about what I'm saying. So that's what I like about you, Sam. It's that thing. You have that thing that most people don't have.
May I make a demand?
Yes. I might not agree to it.
Well, now you have to promise. promise me you'll try.
Yes, I promise.
That you stand on your words. You don't need to question them the way that you're doing it.
Uh-huh.
What I see is that you're doing it from other voices and other influences, and I don't think you need to do that. And I think you should stand on your words and stop questioning them.
I see it. I know what you're talking about. It's very obvious to me. This is why I was saying it's like there's somebody in front of my face talking, and I'm behind that person.
Do you want to let go of that?
Yes.
Then decide to let go of it. You thank it for what it's done for you. It's kept you safe. And you say, I don't want to have you around anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah.
And you let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that I can promise to let go of it 100% because I can't really figure out how to fully let go of it. It's not like there's just one.
If you watch this back and you follow the directions I just said, and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because we only hold on to things that we want to hold on to.
It takes effort to let go of it.
It takes trying.
It's not attached at just one point. It's attached at many points. And it's the thing is, it feels great to sit here and just observe, just perceive without Well, it's
been a protective energy for you for a long time, maybe decades, you know, this mm-hmm. bubble that, just, you know, yeah. Sure. I'm sure it's done many things.
It will disappear one day. Something will happen one day. It will. I know it will.
Why do you know it will?
I just know it will. Because I can see it so clearly.
Yeah, but if you never clean the window, it's not going to get clean.
Yeah, but it will. Because just observation will do it. Because I can see it. I can hear it. I can hear myself talk before I talk. I can feel it in my face. Like I can feel it the way I'm breathing. Like I feel everywhere. Something's not completely connected. But it will. There's something at the center of it that isn't fully.
It won't let go. I maybe you're right, but I'm suspicious that if you don't let it go, it won't let go. Because it's just like, I don't know, like, why would it? Like, unless you were like, hey, I don't want this anymore. I don't want you to be around here anymore. Like, I think I'm good. I'm good, thanks. Yeah. It's like the visual to me is sort of you being in like the rose in Beauty and the Beast, that like glass covering over top of it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like foggy.
Uh-huh. Right.
But as you walk, like you never get to like touch it, because it just like stays at the same perimeter like as you walk around. So you can't actually like break through it or anything. You have to be like, hey, like, get out of here. Like, I'm
yeah.
I don't want you anymore. These things. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I gotta take Maggie for a walk. She's okay. Been patient.
Maggie's been patient.
She has. Well, sort of. She's been whining the entire time. But she's meditated. She's sat with her feelings and she hasn't gotten any results from it. So I suppose it's meditation. Wait, no. I don't want to advertise meditation at all. but you mentioned that you kind of stuck on that thought I said about being your friend. I've often prescribed meditation for people because I think that they should act like a friend to themselves. And I think that sitting with yourself with no other expectation but to sit with yourself is like the kind of friendship that everybody actually wants and nobody gets or does, because they don't know how to ask for it, or they don't have friends that know how to do it, you know, to be in that space of calm and just like, just need somebody to sit with you. Inner child work often looks a lot like that, of like asking people like, hey, like go back to, you know, what age did you have this distress, and like in your mind's eye, like, which apparently is easier for people that are, you know, left-brained, right-handed than it is for people that are right-brained. My friend Roxanne was just talking about the difference in neurology and ability to visualize stuff and how that's affected by what hand dominance you have, and super interesting. But just be like, oh, like, you know, if you look in your mind's eye and, you know, imagine yourself as a kid at a certain age, and, you know, you ask that kid what it needs, it's often just to like have somebody sit with them and not tell them to do anything and just accept them as they are. So to me, meditation is the practice, the actual practice and experience, not the thought experiment, fucking bullshit of like, oh yeah, like great, I accept myself. No, no, no. Like, you accept yourself by sitting with yourself, accepting yourself.
Yeah.
And that feels different. And if you can't, then it means you're not a good friend. Fuck you.
Yeah. Right. Not intellectual understanding. It's something you have to do.
Experience. That was the point of Vipassana, right? It's like your actual experience. You experience the world through your senses. So like, you might as well lean into your senses, because that's how you interact with the world. And which is why visualization strategies are only supposed to work if you actually like feel it and connect to the feeling of what it'd be like to get XYZ or whatever, all these things. Yeah. The world's an interesting place, Michael Corman.
It is interesting. Yeah. This is fun to talk to you about this. I want to talk more.
I was super stoked to come on here. I only do things that I want to do. So that's another trick. So people know that I actually want to be there when I'm there. I literally
respond to good
messages when I want to, all these sorts of things. So Maggie, you ready?
Wait, what kind of pie is it?
Apple.
Okay.
So the apples are sitting in the fridge. I got 3 or 4 different kinds. I don't have like a pie pan either. I have an 8x8. I'm going to try to make a square.
Oh, okay.
Thing. We'll see.
Why not?
Yeah. I know glass changes things. Man, they're so science.
Well, you got to experiment with it. I mean, different ovens are different too.
So hopefully it doesn't suck. So I'm picking my boyfriend up from the airport in an hour ish. Mm-hmm. So it's about time to put it in the oven, and like my hope is that there's like a pastured pork chop dinner and apple pie waiting, because I'm fucking domestic as fuck, and I'm like oh my god, I have an opportunity to like do things for people. Yes. So we'll see. Yeah. But like, you know, stewed apples in some kind of soggy crust would still not be the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with that. I hope that turns out okay. I hope you still have a good relationship after this evening.
Do I have to bake? I don't have to pre-bake the pie crust, right?
No. Okay. Not for an apple pie. No.
Thank you.
I should follow a recipe. I assume you have a recipe of some kind.
I mean, yeah, I'm kind of...
Okay, well, just sort of, okay.
what kind of pie would I need to pre-bake the pie crust for?
Like a pumpkin pie, maybe, because if it's like... Or like with a graham cracker crust or something, where it's... Sometimes it can get really too soggy if you have like a liquid filling. Yeah.
All right, Michael Corman's pie baking videos, next chapter.
Yeah,
go. I'll just
get started on those.
Love you, Michael.
You too, Sam.
I hope you have a really great day.
Thank you. You too.
And thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to our conversation. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate it or review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you do that. It's very helpful for me, not just so that I get more people listening to this, but also so that I have an understanding of how people are reacting to this, because otherwise I don't really know. You can check out any show notes that I might post about this episode at michaelcorman.com/podcast. I'll put anything that might be related, might be relevant. That's about it. So see you next time. Actually, I think you'll hear me next time. I won't see you.